When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey folks, it's Alzo Slade with Cheat here. You know, over the last few years, I've learned a lot about the nature of cheats and why people lie. Sometimes it's motivated by greed and money. Sometimes it's because of pride. And other times it's just because people think that they can get away with it. One of my first introductions to making content and speaking to an audience, if you will, was by being a class clown in school. And that turned into being a stand-up comic. And if there's one thing I know about stand-up comedy, it's kind of competitive. You got to be on your game, and you got to always be coming up with new material. So one thing a lot of comics do is we go watch other comics. You know, we want to see what's out there. We want to meet our peers and see what's funny, what's not, find our voice, and see what lands with the crowd. And that's all well and good until you find yourself sitting in an audience and laughing along when suddenly it hits you that, wait a minute, that bit sounds really familiar. Oh shit, that's because it's my bit. This week on Cheat, joke theft. And it's no laughing matter. So, I've got some good news, and I've got some not-so-good news. This is actually our last episode of Cheat, and you may not hear from us for a while. So grab your Kleenex, wipe the tears. It's been an amazing journey telling you these stories. But the good news is we've got something extra special for you in this episode. I'm joined in the flesh, live and direct, by two amazing fellow comedians to try and better understand the culture surrounding joke theft. First up, we have a very good friend of mine. She's smart, she's funny. It's Chloe Hilliard. She's a comedian, TV writer, and award-winning author. Her book, Fuck Your Diet, is a collection of essays addressing weight, diet culture, feminism, and politics. In 2020, Chloe's book won Best Comedy at the African American Literary Awards. She's appeared on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and Comedy Central. And if that wasn't enough, she's also co-head writer and co-executive producer on the HBO award-winning series, A Black Lady Sketch Show. Chloe, what's happening?
Hey, Alzo, how are you?
Chilling. Appreciate you rocking with us
Absolutely.
Today.
Absolutely.
And also joining us is another good friend of mine, Sydney Washington. She's a comedian, actress, writer, model, and podcaster. She's worked on Comedy Central and last year became an Emmy Award nominee for Outstanding Actress in a Comedy or Drama Series. This year, Sydney won the Writers Guild of America Award for TV in a Comedy Sketch Series and is working on her solo show, How to Start a Fire, directed by none other than Chloe Hilliard. What's up, Sydney?
Hey.
How you feeling?
I'm here. I'm happy.
Okay, that's good. I thought you was going to start with,
No, I'm here and I'm happy to see you and
yeah,
be here.
Yeah, man, it's good to be with my peoples. I appreciate y'all rocking with us. In this episode series, we try to unpack, like, why people cheat, why people lie. Today, we're talking about joke theft. And I figure, why not bring some of the funniest and smartest comics that I know, who are friends of mine, on to unpack this thing in a substantive and funny way. So, first question to you all would be, how would you define joke theft?
I would define it as someone who has watched you perform either in person or video or audio and regurgitates that joke with little to no change. if it's a personal joke, if it's something that is intrinsically yours, when you hear someone else perform it, it really like rings all the alarms because you're like, that is from my experience at this moment in my life where I made funny that I worked mm-hmm. through or I didn't work through and I said it on stage as therapy or whatever. So it can be very personal to hear someone take your life material and use it. Mm-hmm. Now, I think to me, that's the only way that you can really get upset over a joke because it's so a part of who you are. Mm-hmm. Everybody's thinking about mm-hmm. how they hate going to the DMV. Everybody's mm-hmm. thinking about mm-hmm. that kid crying on the plane. So that to me is like, I'll let that slide. But then also it makes me think as a comic, I need to dig deeper and make sure that my material is so attached to who I am mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. if you do steal it and I punch you in the face, I'm justified.
Completely agree with Chloe. I think that is definitely joke theft, but a lot of the times, a lot of people do have surface, hacky, just really, I don't want to say regular, but it's a lot of material that people could have the same situation happen to them. Mm-hmm. It's not mm-hmm. unheard of. Mm-hmm. We've all dated before. We all take the plane. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. even living with older people, you'll hear some jokes and you're like, damn, that's my joke. And it's like, no, you're not the only person who lived with someone who eats Werther's Originals. Like, it's you have to be so specific mm-hmm. that if someone takes your joke, everyone is like, that is an Alzo Slade joke, word for word, bar for bar.
Yeah.
A lot of times it is just premises or it is just like surface around situation. And that's why it's easy to grab.
I've been in situations where somebody will tell a joke and I'm like, God damn it. Why did I think of that?
Yeah.
But it's too late.
It's too late.
It's too late.
I think what makes each comedian special is like, if they're talking about from their perspective or their experiences. So even if somebody has a great, like, topical joke about, like, something that's going on, I'm like, that's not me. I'm not a topical comedian, and I'm not going to get that right. The best way for me to present who I am is to talk about what I've been through or what I've seen or something that happened to me because someone can't tell me that's wrong because that's what happened to me.
Right, and nobody can steal it.
Yeah.
Because you're special about how you set your house on fire when you was a kid. Mm-hmm. If somebody else say that, you're going to be like, come on.
Yeah. It's too intricate. I've had people roll up on me, like early on in my comedy career, after they saw me perform, being like, I got a joke just like that. And I'm like, okay. And in my mind, I'm like, I will never do that joke again. Like, it doesn't break me. I'm not going to, like, once you say I have a joke like that, I'm never going to do it. Or if it's something that's about my life, I'm like, well, actually, I've been doing it. And so that's why it's also really important for comics to record their sets, even if you're just like doing a hole-in-the-wall show. Because if it's a joke that you're like, I'm working on this joke so that it could be in my special, then you need to have like evidence that you've been working on that joke. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I had a recent thing where I did Don't Tell Comedy, and I have a joke about my girlfriend having like a washer or a dryer and a printer or something like that.
Yeah.
And then there were people in the comments, they're like, that's a Shang Wang joke. That's Shang Wang. And I had never heard Shang Wang's joke about it at all. So I was like, it just so happened that, people want printers. But the way I said it, I know that Shang Wang didn't say what I said.
I have a printer joke. I mean, it's not like in my heavy repertoire, but I had a printer joke that I used to do for a while talking about I knew my neighborhood was changing because I started seeing missing cat posters and they were printed in full color. And it's like, you got to have generational wealth to have a printer at home with ink, all the colors. Yeah. So everybody has a printer joke.
Mm-hmm.
Can you recall when you heard a comedian tell someone else's joke and how did you feel and did you do anything?
When I was like 2-3 years in, still going to open mics, telling newer comics like, hey, this comedian who you don't know because you have no reference of comedy already has this joke, already did this thing, or stop saying this person's joke, because there's one thing when you say somebody's joke who's already established, who you're never going to cross. It's another thing when you're saying a comic who lives in the same city's joke and you're going to cross paths eventually. It's going to get back to them and you will be confronted and you got to be able to like defend yourself.
Yeah.
But the more and more I was doing shows and just getting out there, I was hosting an open mic too. But if I see someone that I know, you've been watching that person's set, and now I see you doing something like that or similar, then I could like step in and be like, girl, I was there. Like, I know that you're taking this person's joke. But for the most part, like we were saying in the beginning, yo, a lot of the things that you're like, yo, this is my joke. It's like, no, this is the community's joke.
Yeah.
This is everybody's shit. It's been remixed, the different renditions of it. It's so communal that what do I look like trying to stop this? They'll figure it out.
Well, I'll say this. There's been moments on stage, like in the moment where I've said like a line or a tag. And as soon as it comes out of my mouth, I'm like, that's so-and-so's joke. And then I remember like, okay, I'm never going to do it again. But in that moment, it was truly incidental. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, it's time for me to pull out this person's joke. It's like when it comes out of my mouth, I'm like, so-and-so says this joke and they really like this is really their joke. I'm just throwing this out as an aside. But I know now never to do that joke because I don't want them to think that I've been stealing or poaching parts of their joke.
Yeah.
You all mentioned a community joke. What is a community joke? What is an example of a community joke?
Women be like, men be like.
Yeah, but that's the setup. But the juice is in the punch.
But usually when they say that, I know they're about to say something that I've heard before.
Or you ever had like any setup like where you throw back to hardships in your childhood or like poverty. And it's so interesting because a lot of times you have mega successful comedians, they get to a point where they can't do that material anymore.
Nope.
And because it's like, you're rich, so you can't do a roach joke, you can't do a cheese joke, you can't do I grew up so poor joke. So now what are you talking about now, currently? What are you pulling from your life? And a lot of times when people get to a certain level of fame, they don't want to pull from their lives anymore because they, you know, they want a level of privacy or they don't want to be vulnerable anymore, you know? And I think after a point, people just start like curating these experiences to just have a joke to tell. And it feels so fake to me.
Forced. Yeah. And a lot of times and I see some of these people who are comedians, I'm like, you're in a writer's room back to back to back to back. You're not doing anything. How are you coming up with these stories? No, what you're doing is you're on Twitter, you're on Instagram, you're looking at other people's lives, and then you're mixing that and either putting it in people's shows or you're doing the jokes yourself. So it's like, I see how like joke theft can happen because some people are desperate and it's not that they're not talented. They're just like, yeah, I can't be that vulnerable because I don't do shit or I don't know enough or I don't have this variety of like people in my life. So that's where they come from.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're having this topic on your podcast because I think the only people that really truly care about joke theft are other comedians. And when we complain about it publicly, people are like, so what? Who cares? It's funny. And they really truly don't know. Like, if it's a joke
it's
that's truly attached to who you are as a person, the public doesn't know and doesn't care.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that makes it really hard being a comedian because people think it's easy and it's not.
But let me ask you guys this. Do you think it's taken less seriously than other art forms like plagiarism in film, TV, books, etc.?
Oh, I think it's taken way less seriously because I think in comedy, the rule that was told to me was like, it could be your joke, but really it belongs to the person whoever says it on television first.
I've heard that.
Wow.
Once it goes out to the masses, there's no, you sound crazy being like, that was my joke that they did on late night. Like, no one cares. It's like, whoever sold it to the masses first, it belongs to them now. And that's why you have this uneven power balance because you have somebody who's a big name coming in, sneaking into a club, sitting in the back, watching no-name comics, taking their material, and then go doing it on their tour, on their special, and there's nothing you can say because no one cares that a person with 1,100 followers is saying that a person with 9 million followers took their joke. Like, they just call you a hater.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to True Spies, The podcast that takes you deep inside the greatest secret missions of all time.
Suddenly out of the dark, it's appeared Bin Laden.
You'll meet the people who live life undercover. What do they know? What are their skills? And what would you do in their position?
Vengeance felt good. Seeing these people pay for what they'd done felt righteous.
True Spies from Spyscape Studios, wherever you get your podcasts.
So one of the first people that may come to mind when it comes to joke stealing is Carlos Mencia.
Yeah.
He's a former star of Comedy Central's Mind of Mencia. This dude was accused in the mid-2000s for plagiarism by George Lopez, Bobby Lee, and Joe Rogan. And Rogan ran up on him on stage. And he's been accused of stealing a joke from a 1986 Sam Kinison bit about what life would be like for Jesus if he were married. And Mencia later did a skit on his show, Mind of Mencia, with a similar premise. Now, let me see if I can bring this audio up and we can collectively take a listen and judge for ourselves.
No wife would ever buy the fucking resurrection. He comes in the house, he's going, "And where have you been for 3 days, Mr. Winemaker?" Jesus is going, no, I'll tell you where I've been. First of all, not that it's important, but I was dead! I changed the spiritual form, I'm about to come into the kingdom of God, I go, wait a second! I better go back because she doesn't know where I've been!
Where the hell have you been? You've been gone for like 3 days!
You're unbelievable, Mary! They put a crown of thorns on my head, then they nailed me to the cross. Oh, yeah! Then they left me on the hot sun till I died. Then they threw me in a cave. And what do I do as soon as I come back from the dead? See you.
You're cheating on me, aren't you?
So what y'all think?
Okay, so Sam Kinison was a preacher before he was a comedian. And so for me, even though that isn't like a personal joke, that is a joke that comes from his experience, his point of view as a preacher who became a comedian. Then if you hear, you know, the sketch interpretation of it, it is directly connected to that same premise. It will be hard to equate if that's where he got it from, but it seems very similar. And I think what people don't realize when you do a sketch show, because I work on a sketch show, when writers pitch stuff, we Google it right then and there to be like, does this sound similar? Has anybody done this before? And if they have, what will be our take that's different? And so we don't just go, oh, so-and-so has a joke on their special. We should make that a sketch. We do everything in our power to make sure that we vet all the pitches that come in from our writers. And they are asked to do it before they even pitch it to us. And then we do it again to make sure that we're never in a position where we're producing a sketch that is connected to someone else's intellectual property. And I think, you know, the difference with Carlos Mencia is like at that time when his show came out, social media wasn't that big. There was no real way. People didn't have like their material online. So unless you personally experienced or had an album from one of these comedians or watched their special, you would have no way of cross-checking whether to see if your material is connected to somebody else's stuff that already came out. So it does feel intentional. Like if he was like, oh, I love Sam Kinison and I want to take this joke and make it into a sketch, that's intentional.
So the outcome of the Carlos Mencia thing as it stands right now is that he's continuously denied stealing jokes from other comedians and he's become a controversial figure in the comedy community. One more comic that I want to talk about when it comes to joke stealing. She's been in the press about it. And caveat is that, you know, I don't want to mess up nobody's money here that's on this podcast. Sydney has worked with this comic writing for a show. So, Sydney, you can, you know, recuse yourself as you see fit, because I can't pay your rent or your mortgage. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Not on this pod.
Yeah, exactly.
You ending it.
So, Amy Schumer. She's been accused of stealing jokes by Kathleen Madigan, Wendy Liebman, and Tammy Pescatelli. And I'll just play a couple examples of this and Chloe, maybe you and I could talk about it. If Sydney just gonna sit back and drink a Coke.
No. Keep going. All right, keep going.
Here we go.
Maybe I'm old fashioned, but I like it when the guy pays for sex. I mean that.
I am a good person, I swear to you. Like, I'm very old school. I think the guy should always pay on the first date for sex.
That was Liebman first and then Schumer second. That's the first one. There's one more where Kathleen Madigan, she did a joke from her Comedy Central special in 2006. There's no audio for it, but I'll read it in the best way that I can. So Madigan says, I get why poor people are fat, but Oprah, you're a billionaire. You have enough money to pay a man to stand there and literally slap shit out of your hand before you put it in your mouth. You could hire a full-time food slapper. Schumer's joke. She does a skit on her show called Slap Chef. It's a fake commercial about a new weight loss program where a chef slaps the food out of your hands before you eat it.
Okay, so the first one is definitely very, like, eerily similar. And Wendy Lieberman is known for her delivery. So that, like, setup and, like, side swipe is classic Wendy. And so, to me, it's more like a tonal thing. Also, as well as a material thing. Mm-hmm. It's like the inflection, it's the delivery. It's very, very similar. So that one would be a little bit hard to, like, dispute. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is similar to, like, Carlos Mencia and Sam Kinison. It's like, here you have an actual joke, and here you have an interpretation of that joke. And that, to me, is a little harder. I don't want to say that Amy herself stole this concept if there's a writer's room. And, you know, like I said, on Black Lady Sketch Show, when you have a writer's room of people who are pitching stuff, you have to vet the material. When you perform someone's joke and interpret it in material for a screenplay or script, it's a little bit harder because there's other writers involved. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not. No, I don't think fair. It's just Amy's fault. Yeah.
But also, people have other people go to shows, listen to stuff, and come back.
I want to be clear. It's not the intention. Like, as a head writer in a room, I'm not telling my writers to go out and listen to people's material.
Yeah.
It's on them to do that. Mm-hmm. It's on them if they choose to do that. I don't know where they get the idea from. But if I hear an idea and I'm like, that sounds familiar, I think someone's done that already, let's look it up. And we see it, then we're not doing it. But I'm not going to say, that looks familiar, that sounds familiar, and we still do it.
Yeah.
But that's why there's, like, there should be checks and balances.
Yeah.
So the current situation when it comes to Amy Schumer is a lot of the comedians who accuse Amy have actually since deleted their tweets about Schumer. Wendy Liebman tweeted that she and Schumer were probably parallel thinking when it came to the paying for sex joke. And actually, in 2022, Amy Schumer took a lie detector test regarding her joke stealing allegations in an interview with Vanity Fair. It showed she was telling the truth when she said she didn't steal jokes. And Amy has gone on to have a successful career, obviously. And so does it matter that these allegations have followed her, if they have? And does the fact that she's a woman in comedy matter when it comes to allegations of joke stealing? And I think this is a proper question for y'all is, like, are women scrutinized more in comedy? And in this conversation, we have not only women, but Black women.
Well, Black women aren't scrutinized because nobody pays us any attention. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to white women, or I would just say women in general in comedy, it's so few of us who get to peek through to the upper echelons of, like, massive success, right? Mm-hmm. There's, you know, when people talk about women comedians, they say Amy Schumer, they say Tiffany Haddish, and they may be hard-pressed to say a third at this time in comedy.
Yeah.
Years prior, they would say, you know, Whitney Cummings or, you know, Eliza Schlesinger or Chelsea Handler. You know, so there are names that we hear because these women have gone from, like, the club to the theater to a special to a show to a movie, but there aren't a lot of us in abundance that all have that same opportunity at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that makes it even more critical when you have one person that you can focus all your attention on. And, you know, there may be 500 men compared to one Amy Schumer, and they all could be, you know, interpreting other people's material, but they don't get scrutinized because it's 500 of them. And who has the time to sit there and, like, nitpick?
We'll be right back after the break. A couple times you all have said that people don't care about joke theft, like the general public. Yeah. Audiences don't care about joke theft, only comics. So do you think joke theft damages a comic's reputation?
It damages your reputation in our industry and amongst us, right? So imagine if, like, if all the comedians worked at like a department store and you have one person who is making all the commissions because they're smoozing and they're like, you know, making the client feel great. And so everybody wants to go to them, but you know that they're doing things that you taught them or that they saw you doing. Only you care about that. The public is like, I'm having a great experience with this person. They know everything that I want. They anticipate. They make me happy. They make me feel special. I feel seen. And so we care, but at the end of the day, that person's making a bunch of commission.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the bosses and the powers that be only care about the person that's making a bunch of commission. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you could be in your feelings, but that person's still going to be successful. Now, what will happen is when they come around to the break room, you may not talk to them. You may
not
fuck with them.
They're not getting no play. And I've seen it. I've seen it. Like, there's people who have projects. Nobody will repost it. Nobody will comment on it. Yeah. Nobody has anything. They don't have no say in it. And it's like, but they've built an empire on, you know, lies and deceit. Lies and deceit and work. But, I mean, do you want to be a comic and, you know, be loved by your peers? Or do you want to have these masses who will come and support whatever you do and come out and get your shmoney? You know, it's there is a middle, but I'm saying there is also the extreme of, I know a lot of comics who don't steal jokes and they are not able to pay their rent.
Yeah.
And they are not in anything. And but they're still going to shows, crushing it every time, giving it their all. But they ain't making no coin. So it's like, you know, you doing the right thing is good because you're like morally, oh, I know that I'm going to go to bed and be a good person. But then they ain't got no good sheets to sleep on, or they ain't got no food. And the people who are doing this quote joke theft or whatever, at the end of the day, they doing fine.
Yeah.
And also
I think a lot of times, like the examples that you showed of people, comics who are like, well, we made amends, or maybe it was me. It's like, the truth of the matter is they know that this is not a hill that they can die on, because that person who they're challenging as being the person that's still
at the
joke,
top of the hill.
They're at the top of the hill. And also they have a legion of fans. And now with like this fandom and social media and trolls, it's like they will ruin your life. They will absolutely ruin your life for speaking up on behalf of your art and your experience. And who wants that headache? Who wants that headache?
Reddit is a sick place, and those people have nothing but time and Wi-Fi to ruin your life.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how social media has changed comedy. So TikTok has become huge. We'll see if it's banned or not, but where folks just go online and they may be comics, they may use other people's stuff who's not comics, but they go viral using stuff that is not theirs. And I want to play this montage of clips for y'all and discuss it.
Okay, well, that's you. But on the other hand, me? Oh, I'm gonna turn up.
Girl, don't do it. It's not worth it. I'm not gonna do it, girl. I was just thinking about it. I'm not gonna do it. I did it.
We in this bitch. Finna get crunk. Abraz on fleek. The fuck?
Nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna know.
They're gonna know.
How would they know?
Woo! That'll do it. You don't have to worry about me. You do not have to worry about me.
Oh my God, corny, lame, boo, tomato, 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 I'm throwing tomato.
Okay, for the record, as we played that montage, Sydney Washington knew every single one of them.
Obsessed.
And she was over here lip-singing herself, miming. And
they're all a hit. Every single one of them, a hit, a hit, a hit. I will say, everybody has done their due diligence to make sure they knew who the original creator is and are probably following those creators, or they've definitely have blown up from it as well.
The creators have blown up.
Yeah, from doing that sound.
Yes, but not to the degree that they should, because people are still reposting it. And I think, you know, on Instagram now, you'll see like the audio and they'll say original, and then it'll be like the person who posted it. And you're like, I know this is not your voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I do wish that there were The same way, like, you can't post a song that's owned by Universal Music Group and they'll flag it and take your shit down. I feel like we should get to the point where it's like, this is my voice, and anywhere where my voice is used, I need to be compensated, or I can say I'm taking it down.
That would be dope.
That would be amazing, especially for, you know, vocal artists or comedians or spoken word poets, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, if one, it helps you introduce to the larger body of work that this is being taken from. Also, it can actually compensate people whose voices we hear all the time now, because they're regular people who just say funny shit on social media. They should absolutely be compensated. Yeah. Like, they should get a percentage of every view that their voice generates. And then the other part, it's like, also, we got to protect our own intellectual property, because we are weeks away from everything being AI generated. So now people can just take your voice and be like, I like the way Alzo's voice sounds. I'm just going to recreate his voice and have him saying a bunch of shit. And if you don't have the wherewithal or the money to fight it, you can't do nothing about it.
That's crazy. And yes, it's a great way of, getting the joke out there and it's viral. But if people aren't tagging and saying that's your joke, then it's just somebody else getting all these likes and views off of your material. But I will say, sometimes how people act out the joke is funnier than the joke. So I will give them that. You know what I mean? But if someone's just saying a joke, lip syncing it on TikTok, and now it has like 2 million views, how does that help? How does that help the person who actually did the joke?
But again, that goes back to what I said earlier about, like, comedy is not really respected as an art form because people think that lip syncing it is just as valuable as having credited the actual person.
And that's the problem with, like, you want to put your material out there because you're like, yes, people are going to see this and they know it's mine. But then you open up the door to someone seeing your stuff and they're like, oh, I'm going to remix this, or, oh, I'm going to take this word for word and this is going to work. And if somebody confront me, and what you going to do? What's going to happen? Yeah. I'm still going to get jobs. I'm still going to get money. So what's the problem?
Yeah.
The clips that I have put up on Instagram, some have definitely gone viral. I don't really have people that remake my stuff, but I do know when I see people's who I know in real life, when their joke gets remixed, if it comes across me, I send it to them like, hey, this person's doing your joke. Like, you should, it has 3 million views. You may want to hit them up and be like, can you tag me, please, or something.
No, I actually say, please don't tag me, because I don't even want, why am I just getting tagged? Like, if I'm not getting, if these views are not on my page, I don't want the trickle down. I don't want the runoff of your success.
You just another view.
Yeah, no way.
But you know,
good.
The part about it is, I think it is important to tag people, because a lot of times in the comments, people are like, who is the comedian? I want to know who this person is. I think this material is funny. Clearly, it's not yours, because you're a housewife in Nebraska who's talking about being a sexy black woman in Brooklyn. So where'd you get this material from? So I can follow that person. So it is a good way for people to discover you and, like, say, okay, if this was the watered down version, I want the pure version. So let me go follow this person. And you'll get, like, dedicated fans that way. But
I don't know.
Really,
I haven't seen it. All I see is that, because the way it works on the internet, the way people view what's funny is not the same as if when you're actually in the comedy club.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So their minds, for me, is scrambled eggs. Like, what they think is funny. No. I'm not saying that the audience is dumb, but I will say that they rather have a watered-down version, because that's easier to digest. They don't want to have to actually sit in the club and hear a five-minute bit and hear the payoff at the end or the story.
Yeah.
I mean, that definitely is true.
Yeah. But it also begs the question, is there anything that is actually really original?
Not anymore. I truly believe this. I believe that everything right now is a photocopy of a photocopy.
But I think the people who are, like, not, like, famous or not going viral, or they'll put their jokes out there and it's not getting a lot of, like, traction, it's not because it's not funny. It's just because it's not communal. It's not one of those things that, oh, I can relate to it, or that has happened to me. You know, the things that are super niche or people are like, huh? That's the stuff that I'm like, yo, nobody has done that before.
Yeah.
Nobody. The other people have to get on board with this for it to go viral and say, oh, this is good. And then it gets validity, like, oh, it's funny. Yeah. Because people hate taking risks. They want to laugh at the easy stuff. They want to get the stuff that they already know where it's going to go.
Yeah. And I think also with the social media thing, it really does a disservice to actual comedians, because now you have like a generation of comics who have sprouted up over the past like 5-6 years, and all they do is record material for social media and they just come up with like a 20-30 second clip and they never like dig down deeper into the joke. And so like, if you are a fan of stand-up comedy and you go and see somebody live, like, please support stand-up comedy.
Please.
Like, go to the clubs, see the comics who are really honing their skills. Social media is cool, but like, if you want like a real experience, go to your local comedy club, see who's coming into town.
Yeah,
support the comics that you like. Tell your friends about them, like, truly, because there's still a group of people out here, a lot of us, who are like really love and appreciate the art of stand-up comedy. And we put a lot of time and energy and effort in our own like hardships, our traumas, our like triggers, like a lot of our like personal emotional shit that we can't afford therapists for until you get to a certain point is what we say on stage.
Let the folks know where they can find you all on social media.
You can find me at Chloe_Hilliard, H-I-L-L-I-A-R-D, on Twitter and Instagram. I'm not on TikTok because they ban me every time I post something. You can also go to ChloeHilliard.com and join my mailing list so you can be in direct contact with me in case I continue to get banned on social media platforms.
And what about you, Sid?
I'm on Instagram, just SidBW. I don't really use Twitter anymore, so it doesn't matter. And I'm on TikTok, but that's very much a work in progress. So just hit me up on Instagram. That's the most interaction you're going to get from me, baby. Thank you.
Well, no, thank you all for hanging with me and having this dope conversation. Joining us here on Cheat, it's been great to hang with y'all. And, you know, I appreciate both of y'all's time. And for the folks listening, wherever you are, Cheat will be going off the air for the foreseeable future. But we have 4 strong seasons. If you have not listened to them, go back and listen to them.
It's time.
Yes, it's time. If you have listened to them all, then that means you're a fan and you probably would enjoy listening to them again. So, since we might not meet again in this spot on this podcast, who knows, we may pick it up later on. But for now, I'll say goodbye, and I really appreciate y'all listening. It means a lot. And you can listen to all our previous episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from, including wild stories like this one.
You don't think they're going to lie to you, but if they're nuns, it's not like somebody was forcing her to embezzle this money and then take it to Vegas and put it on the table.
Cheat is presented by me, Alzo Slade. And this dope episode was produced by Casey Georgie and Olivia Cope. The executive producers are Lizzie Jacobs and Tom Koenig. The series editor is Megan Dietrich. The original idea for the show was developed by Tom Fuller. Mixing and scoring by Martin Peralta at Output Media. Kyra Asabe Bonsu is our associate producer. Special thanks to the Sony Legal team. Our production coordinators are Jennifer Mystery and Iker Egbatola.